We're on Yud Gimel and Aleph, three lines down, the fourth word on the line where it says, Meisvei. Yesterday we learned the Mishnah which taught us that it would be prohibited for a Jew to purchase things at a pagan store that is decorated. Rashi to the Mishnah explained that the decorations indicate that this particular store will be paying some taxes, will pay some of its proceeds to the local idol. The Gemara brought a dispute between Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan as to what exactly the problem is. Why exactly is it prohibited? Reish Lakish said that Mishnah is specifically referring to decorations made up of things like roses or myrtle that emit a nice fragrance, and these things had been brought as an offering to the idol. And so the issue is that now if the Jew enters the store, he's going to be taking in that fragrance, benefiting from a fragrance from something that was offered to an idol, which is prohibited. However, Reish Lakish said, if the decorations did not emit any aroma, then it would not be a problem, even though we know that the money will end up being given as taxes to the idol. So at least indirectly, the Jew is going to be benefiting an idol. Yet Reish Lakish said it's not prohibited. Reish Lakish's understanding of the Pasuk is that it only prohibits benefiting from an idol, but not benefiting an idol. However, Rabbi Yochanan argued that if the Torah prohibits benefiting from the idol, then certainly a Jew may not benefit an idol. And so Rabbi Yochanan said that to whether or not there's a fragrance, if there are decorations, which means that part of the money will go to an idol, thus benefiting the idol, then it's prohibited. That was the dispute, Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan, we learned yesterday. The Gemara today begins with a challenge to Reish Lakish's opinion from Rabbi Brisa. The Gemara says, Meisvei. He asked on Reish Lakish from the following Brisa. Says the Brisa, Rabbi Nassan Omer. Rabbi Nassan says, Yom she'avodas kochavim menachas bo es ha-meches. It was a day on which the idolatrous priests who would impose the sales tax offered an exemption, that the people, the merchants, don't have to pay taxes that day. What was the offer? Machriz and Viomrim, they would announce as follows. Kol misha notel atara. Anybody who takes a wreath, v'yaniach b'rosho, v'rosh chamoro, l'chvod avodas kechavim, places the wreath on his head and on the head of his donkey in honor of the idol, yaniach lo samechas, taxes will be waived for him. If he doesn't put the wreath on his head and his animal's head, then he will not receive this tax exemption. Says the Braisa, Yehudi shenimtza sham mayasa. A Jew who finds himself in this predicament, if he is part of this community, is engaging in commerce in this place, what would he do? He would be in a real conundrum. For on the one hand, if he goes and places the wreath on his head, nimtzenena, well then he would be benefiting from this idolatrous material, this wreath that was first brought as an offering for the idol. Now the Jew is going to place it on his head and take in the nice fragrance, so that would be prohibited. On the other hand, lo yaniach, if the Jew chooses not to put the wreath on his head, it's still a problem. For then he's going to have to pay taxes to this idolatrous priest, the Nimsa Mehana. It will emerge that he is then benefiting the local idol by paying a tax to the idol. So there's no way around it. One way or the other, the Jew will be violating a prohibition. Therefore, says the Braisa Mikanam from here, because of this problem, Chazal said, "A no sevin, no sein b'shuk shel avodas kochavim." A Jew who transacts, does some business transaction in the marketplace of avodah zarah, where you have these idolatrous priests going around collecting a tax. The Rabbanan said, "Whatever he acquires in any such deal, behema tiaker. If it was, let's say, an animal, the animal shall be uprooted. It is, it shall be hamstringed, as was described." On Yud Aleph Amid Beis, and in the case of Peiros, Chsus, Vekelim, if he had purchased produce, clothing, or utensils made out of material that goes bad eventually, the halacha is Yirkavu. He must set these things aside somewhere no one will find them, and leave them there and let them rot, let them go bad. In the case of Ma'os, Ukli Matochos, if he received metal coins or metal utensils through his commerce with the idolatrous marketplace, Yulichem Liyama Melach, you should take them to the Dead Sea and cast them in there. And the Braisa explains, Ve'ezehu Ikor, how is the process of Ikor, of hamstringing the animal, accomplished? The Braisa says, Amenasher Parso Seam in Arakuvo Lamata. It's accomplished by severing the tendon in the animal's leg and the lower part of the leg between the Arakuva and below. It's like the lower, third portion of the leg, the joint there. The Gemara now makes its point, which is Ketani Mias. Either way, the Braisa said, regarding this Jew and the dilemma he would find himself in, the Rabbi said, described, if Yaniach Nimtzanen, again, if he puts the wreath on his head, he's going to benefit from the wreath. If lo Yaniach Nimtza Mehane. On the other hand, if he does not take advantage of the tax exemption, it means he'll be paying tax to the idol, and he'll thereby be benefiting the idol, which clearly the Bryce is saying would be prohibited. Not like Reish Lakish said. The Gemara answers for Reish Lakish. Amar Rav Misharsha Berei the Rav Idi. Answers, Kesavar Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, Pligi Rabbanan Alei the Rabbi Nasan. Shlakish says, true, the Tana of the above Bryce is clearly saying that benefiting an idol is prohibited. However, that Bryce represents the minority view of Rabbi Nasan, the Rabbanan, argue with Rabbi Nasan v'ana the Amri k'Rabbanan de pligi alei. I, Reish Lakish, would say side with the Rabbanan who disagree with Rabbi Nasan. The Gemara below will quote the Braisa where apparently we find the Rabbanan arguing with Rabbi Nasan on this issue. If this is true, then now it becomes a problem for Rabbi Yochanan. Then his opinion would be only like the minority view. The Gemara says, Rabbi Yochanan savar lo pligi. Rabbi Yochanan held that it's not true the Rabbanan did not disagree the view of Rabbi Nasan, rather, all Tanoim agree that it is prohibited to bring a benefit to an idol. The Gemara questions this velo pligi, but do the Rabbanan not argue with Rabbi Nasan? But I, Votanya, it says in a Braisa, Braisa says, Holchel yorich alovde kochavim, that it is permitted. We may go to a fair being held by idolaters, even when they're observing an idolatrous festival, v'lokhi mehem behema avodim u'shvachos batim v'sados u'karamim. And one may purchase animals, slaves, maidservants, houses and fields, and vineyards. Furthermore, v'kose v'mala b'arkos shalahen. It's permitted to have a document drafted and processed in their courts. Even though there's a possibility that, you know, they'll feel honored that the Jews are utilizing their courts. Maybe this will lead them to go and praise their idol. However, the Rabbanan permitted this. Because there's no other choice really here. Having the various transactions recorded is the only real way that a Jew can ensure he won't lose his money. So he's like saving his money from their hands. And therefore, the Rabbanan were lenient on this. The Braisa says further, the Rabbanan permitted a Kohen to leave Eretz Yisrael, even though the Rabbanan decreed a status of Tumah, ritual impurity, on the land outside of Eretz Yisrael, because they're less careful outside of Eretz Yisrael in tracking graves. So the Rabbanan instituted a stringency that, you know, going outside of Eretz Yisrael makes a person rabbinically impure. And so normally a Kohen would not be able to just leave Eretz Yisrael. However, the Rabbanan allowed him to leave Eretz Yisrael to go and litigate with an idolater to retrieve his money. And the Braisa says further, Ukeshem shemetame b'chutz laretz, just as the Rabbanan permitted him here to go and become tame by going outside of Eretz Yisrael, kach metame bebeis hakvaros, so too the Rabbanan said a Kohen may even enter a cemetery if he needs to do that in order to retrieve his money. Now the Gemara objects to this. Gemara says, what does that mean? Beveis HaKfara is Salka Daitach. Is it conceivable that the Braisa is saying that Kohen may actually go in a cemetery in order to retrieve his money, but to Tumah Daraisi, to go into a cemetery, would result in contracting Tumah on the biblical level? And so surely, if you're dealing with a biblical prohibition, you know, the Torah says the Kohen can't become Tameh. If you're talking about a situation where Minatara, the Kohen becomes Tami, which is surely the halacha if he enters an actual cemetery, then how could we simply permit him to do that just to save his money? He's not allowed to transgress a biblical prohibition to retrieve his money, so it can't mean that. So the Gemara instead explains, Ella, bebeis hapras, the Rabbanan. The Gemara explains that in fact the Braisa wasn't referring to an actual cemetery. Rather, it was referring to a beis hapras, which means a field in which there were graves that were plowed over. So you have this large area where there's a possibility that maybe there's a little fragment of human bone anywhere within this area, up to 100 amas from the location of the actual grave. Let's say there's just one single grave. So up to 100 amas away is beis hapras, person cannot go in there. If he does, on the Rabbanan level, he will be tameh. So the Braisa is saying that the Rabbanan issued a leniency that even though they normally consider a person who enters a beis hapras tameh, so a Kohen would normally not be allowed to enter there, but if he needed to retrieve money, to go, let's say, litigate with this idolater, then it would be permitted. The Braisa continues, another leniency is, a metameh lilma Torah v'lisa isha. The Rabbanan also permitted a person to leave Eretz Yisrael, you know, and thereby become rabbinically tameh, if that was necessary in order to learn Torah. If his Torah teacher was located outside of Eretz Yisrael, you would be allowed to leave to travel to him to learn Torah from him. And also, if he needed to leave Eretz Yisrael to get married, that too would be permitted. The Braisa brings an opinion that qualifies one of these cases. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Emasai. Rabbi Yehuda said, when would the Rabbanan issue such a permit for someone who wants to leave Eretz Yisrael to learn Torah? Bizman she'ein motzei lumot. It's only in a situation where somehow there was nobody in Eretz Yisrael who was available to teach him Torah. But if there is some teacher, some institution where he could learn Torah in Eretz Yisrael, then says Rabbi Yehuda, he may not leave Eretz Yisrael and make himself tame to learn by a different teacher outside of Eretz Yisrael. However, the Braisa brings a different view on this. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Rabbi Yossi says that not true. Rather, afilu bizman shemotzi lilmod yitame. Even if there is somebody who can teach him Torah in Eretz Yisrael, if the student in question feels it will be more successful if he learns under a different teacher who's outside of Eretz Yisrael, then it would be permitted to leave Eretz Yisrael to go and learn by that teacher. Because the fact is, not everyone merits to learn successfully by just any teacher. Rather, we recognize the possibility that this particular student might need a particular teacher. And if that specific teacher that he feels will be successful learning under is located outside of Eretz Yisrael, then he may travel outside of Eretz Yisrael to go and learn by that teacher. And Rabbi Yossi corroborates this with an actual case. Amar Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi said, "Maisa bi Yosef HaKohen." Once happened with Yosef HaKohen, shahalach acher rabbo litzidon lilmud Torah, went along with his teacher to Tzidon outside of Eretz Yisrael to learn Torah. Even though he surely could have studied under a teacher in Eretz Yisrael, so we see that if the student feels that he needs this particular teacher who's outside of Eretz Yisrael, then it's permitted to leave to learn by that teacher. The point from this Braisa for our discussion is, the Braisa is pretty clearly saying that a Jew may patronize these idolatrous merchants at the idolatrous fair, even though presumably some of that money is going to end up being given as taxes to the idol. So it does appear from this Braisa, as Rish Lakish suggested above, that although Rabbi Nassan prohibits a Jew from causing benefit to an idol, apparently the Tan of this Braisa, the Rabbanan, disagree, and they say, no, there's no prohibition against benefiting an idol. Now, it has happened. There have been times where an Amora wasn't aware of a Braisa. So maybe Rabbi Yochanan was not aware of this Braisa, but the Gemara says that clearly he was aware of the Braisa. For V'yomer Rabbi Yochanan halacha k'Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yochanan actually weighed in on the Braisa, and he ruled like Rabbi Yossi in terms of this question of, can a student leave Eretz Yisrael if he feels he'll only be successful by a particular teacher who's outside of Eretz Yisrael? Rabbi Yochanan rules like Rabbi Yossi. So obviously, Rabbi Yochanan himself was well aware of this Braisa and the Halma Pligi. And we see from the Braisa that the Rabbanan of this Braisa do argue there be nothing. Again, the Rabbanan seem to be saying in the Braisa that the fact that the part of the proceeds of the money the Jew is going to give to the idolatrous merchant, the fact that that money is going to go to the idol, is not an issue, does not make it prohibited. The Gemara answers for Rabbi Yochanan, Amr lach Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yochanan would say to you, Le'olam lo pligi. Really, it's not true. The Rabbanan do not disagree with Rabbi Nassan. Rather, everybody agrees that there is a prohibition against benefiting an idol. If some of that money is going to go to the idol, then surely it would be prohibited according to all opinions. Velo kasha. What about this Braisa here? Yochanan would say it's not a problem. For Khan, here in the earlier Braisa, where Rabbi Nassan says it's prohibited if the money is going to go as taxes to the idol, is referring to a case of Lokeach min hatagar. That is referring to where a Jew is purchasing the item from an idolatrous merchant. This person is in business. He's like an official merchant. The Shakli Mechsimine, and therefore, presumably, this merchant here at the idolatrous fair will be paying some of the money as a tax to the idol. Therefore, Rabbi Nassan says it's prohibited in that case. Whereas Khan, here in the last Braisa, the one we just discussed, where it says it's permitted to purchase things from idolatrous sellers at the idolatrous fair, he's referring to Belokeach mi balabayas. It's where he's purchasing the thing from a balabayas, from a private homeowner. It's not somebody who's in business, not an official, a licensed, whatever merchant. The point is, the lo shakli michsaminei. There's therefore no assumption that the idolatrous priest is going to go and impose taxes from a balabayas. Just anybody who shows up at the fair to sell something will be taxed. It's only the official merchants who are taxed So since the money is not going to go to the idol, therefore, the Braisa does not prohibit purchasing things from those kind of sellers at the idolatrous fair. When it further discusses this penalty, the Rabbanan said that if a Jew does engage in illegal commerce with idolaters, and if he had purchased an animal, then Amar Ma, the Braisa said, Behemat Teaker, that animal shall be quote-unquote uprooted, meaning the animal must be hamstring, must be crippled by cutting the tendon near the lower joint in the leg. The Gemara asks, but v'ha'ikat sar bali chayim, but aye, this is causing suffering to a living creature, which normally is prohibited. One can't just cause suffering to an animal for no reason. The Gemara answers, Amar Abaye said that it's permitted in this case because doing this does serve a constructive purpose. Ram Rachmana, the Torah said, Es suseyam te'aker, referring to the spoils of the Canaan people after they'll be defeated by Yeshua's army. Shem says in the Torah that you shall hamstring their horses. So in other words, the Torah is saying that this is an important step, you know, when defeating the enemy, to totally subjugate the enemy, demoralize the enemy, hamstring their horses. So similarly, in our case, the Rabbanan said, in order to enforce the halacha, to make sure that the person is not going to patronize idolatrous merchants, to support, to benefit their idols, if one does, then we hamstring the horse to make, you know, a very strong statement, which will serve as a deterrent, and, you know, punish this person from violating the decree. In our studies, the next part of the Braisa, Amar Mar, the Braisa had described Ve'ezewi Ikor. How does one do the Ikor? Menasher Parsosem in Arkuvo Lamato. He severs the tendon by the joint there, just under the hock. It means the lower part of the animal's leg. And that's how the Ikor is done. The Gemara asks, Ramini, but contrast this with a different Braisa, which says, Ein Magdishin Ve'ein Machrimin Ve'ein Marichin Bizman Hazeh. Braisa, first of all, rules that one may not consecrate an animal nowadays, whether he does it through a hakdash, he simply, you know, consecrates the animal for the Beis HaMikdash, or does it through a cherem or through an erech. So they're all, you know, means of conferring a consecrated status on an animal. And at the time of the Beis HaMikdash, the animal would go to the Beis HaMikdash. But of course, we no longer have the Beis HaMikdash. Therefore, the Braisa says one specifically should not do any of these kinds of consecrations, because you can end up with this animal that carries a severe prohibition for anyone to benefit from it, being that it is property of the Beis HaMikdash, and yet it can't actually be used by the Beis HaMikdash. So there's a big risk that the animal's sanctified status will be violated. The Braisa says, V'im higdish v'hechrim v'harich, if somebody violated this halacha, he went ahead and consecrated an animal nowadays, halacha is behema te'aker. If he had indeed consecrated an animal, then that animal te'aker shall be uprooted. If he consecrated something else, let's say peiros, chsus, v'kelim, produce, clothing, or utensils that, let's say, earthenware ones that will go bad eventually if you just leave it, so turning to Amid Bey's Yerkevu, those should be hidden somewhere where no one will find it and left to rot. And in the case of Maos, Uklema Tachos, if it was coins or metal utensils, then Yalichem Liam Melach, they'll have to be cast into the Dead Sea. And then the Braisa says, this is the part that's going to be problematic. Says the Braisa, V'yezeu Ikor, how does one accomplish the Ikor here? How does one dispose of this animal that was illegally consecrated? Says the Braisa, Noel Deles Bifaneha Vihi Mesa Me'ela. One shuts the door on the animal and doesn't feed it, lets it starve and die. So of course the issue is that this Braisa describes the Ikar in a very different way than our Braisa did above. So how do we reconcile these two different descriptions? Amar Abaye, Abaye said, the answer is, Shaini Hasam Mishum Bezayin Kachim. In general, Ikar means to hamstring the animal as was described earlier. But there, in the last Braisa about the illegally consecrated animal, we can't do it that way. Out of consideration, not to disgrace consecrated property. For if you would go ahead and hamstring this consecrated animal, it would remain in its disgraced state for a prolonged period. So this would not be appropriate, not a proper way to handle something that has a consecrated status. Therefore, the Braisa instructed this alternative kind of ikor, where the animal is simply, you know, left to die. The Gemara wonders, okay, if the issue is we don't want to keep the animal around in a disgraced state, then why not v'nishachte mishchat? Why not just shecht the animal then? Just slaughter it. Gemara answers, if we give the animal a proper shechita, then isbehu lidei takala. And that would create a situation which could cause people to stumble. You'll be left with the meat of an animal that was given a proper shechita. And so if someone doesn't realize that the animal was consecrated, which of course makes it prohibited for any benefit, he might go ahead and eat the meat of the animal, which would be a serious prohibition. Therefore, we don't go with that option, but the Gemara wonders, okay, if that's your concern, why not just, let's say, chop the animal in half? The point is, kill it quickly in a way that it's, you know, clearly not a valid shechitas. No one's going to consider to eat it because they know clearly, okay, the meat of this animal is not kosher. And this would be a way to immediately dispose of the animal. Why not do it that way? Abaye again answers, Omar Abaye, I said, the answer is because Omar Kra, the Pasuk says, "Vinitatzem es mizbechosam lo sasun kein la'Hashem elokeichem." You shall destroy their altars. You shall not do this to Hashem, your God. So the Pasuk here specifically prohibits a person from destroying consecrated property. So to go ahead and take a big, you know, cleaver and cleave this animal in two would be, you know, too much of a destructive act. And so it would violate lo sasun kein la'Hashem elokeichem. That's why that's not an option. Rather, we close the door on the animal and we let it just die of starvation. The Gemara suggests a different approach now, going back to the original question of, you know, why this brisa offers a whole different method of ikur. It describes it not as hamstringing the animal, but to closing the door on the animal, letting it die. The Gemara asks, you know, why doesn't the brisa say the regular kind of ikur, where we hamstring the animal, we cut it by the tendon there, by the joints? The Gemara now suggests, Rava Omar, Mipnei Shinira Kematil Mum Bekachim. We can't do that in this case involving a consecrated animal, because then it would have the appearance of making a blemish in a sacrificial animal. The Torah prohibits a person from making a mum, from making a blemish in a sacrificial animal, for that disqualifies it from being able to be offered as a sacrifice. So Rava says that if one would sanctify an animal nowadays and then hamstring it, that would have the appearance, it would be like a rabbinic form of this prohibition, because he is making a blemish in this sanctified animal. Gemara wonders why Rava used this particular language, why he's saying that it's merely a rabbinic violation here. Nira, it appears like he's making a blemish in this sanctified animal. Why mum ba'al yahu? He is actually making a blemish in this sanctified animal. So why didn't Rav say even stronger that this would be an actual biblical violation? The Gemara answers that no. Hani mili bizman shebeis hamikdash kayim. The biblical prohibition against making a blemish in a sanctified animal only applies while the beis hamikdash is still standing. The chazi lakrava, which is a time when a sanctified animal is able to be brought as a sacrifice. However, hashta de lo chazi la krava, but nowadays without the base of Bigdash, so you anyways can't bring this animal as a sacrifice, less lun ba. In terms of the actual biblical prohibition, we are not concerned the biblical prohibition does not apply. The wording of the pasuk, which discusses this, says tamim yiyet l'ratzon. It refers to the fact that, you know, the animal shall remain perfect, unblemished, so that it can be a pleasing sacrifice. So therefore, the Gemara says, nowadays, that anyways, it can't be a sacrifice. The biblical prohibition would not apply, but Rav is saying that there's still a rabbinic prohibition. It still looks like if a person who is violating the sin of making a blemish in a sanctified animal. But the Gemara still questions this. Gemara says, what do you mean? V'lahavi kematil mum bebal mum. Shouldn't our case be essentially the same as a person who would make a blemish in an already blemished sacrificial animal? Whereby the halacha is the afogav, the lo chazi la krava, even though, of course, if it's already been blemished, so that anyways can't be used as a sacrifice, still, usur. It's clear from the Mishnah Becharos that the practical halacha is that it still would be a biblical prohibition to go ahead and make a blemish in this sacrificial animal. So the question returns, you know, our case as well, you know, even though we don't have the base of Migdash, so practically we can't bring the animal, but still it should be no worse than a person who blemishes an already blemished sacrificial animal. And so seemingly there still should be an actual biblical prohibition here. So Rava should have said it even stronger. But the Gemara answers by drawing a distinction that regarding that case of a balmum, you have this sacrificial animal that, yes, it already has a blemish. But in that case, here's what we say. Nehi de lo chazi le gufe. True, you can't bring this animal itself as a sacrifice because it already has a blemish. However, le deme chazi. However, its value could be used to bring an actual sacrifice in the time of the Beis HaMikdash. That is, the Beis HaMikdash could simply sell the animal, and then the money will have the consecrated status, and they could use the money to purchase a new, perfectly fit offering. and bring that offering. So the point is, the value at least of the animal in question could ultimately be used to bring an actual sacrifice, if we still have the Beis HaMikdash. So there indeed, it's true. There would be a biblical prohibition to make a blemish in this animal, even though it already had a blemish, because the fact is, it is an animal that has the potential to be used as a sacrifice, fuke hacha, as opposed to our case, meaning as opposed to nowadays, we don't have the Beis HaMikdash at all, and so the lo l'demei chazi v'lo l'gufei chazi, you obviously can't bring the animal itself as a sacrifice, nor could you use demei, its value for sacrifice. There's simply no way to bring a sacrifice without the Beis HaMikdash. As such, the biblical prohibition no longer applies. However, if it says, there's still a rabbinic prohibition, it still looks like the person is violating the sin, and therefore it's prohibited to go and sever the tendon of this animal, give it a permanent blemish. That's why that is not an option in our situation. Gemara brings another conversation in connection with the braisa we learned. Ashkechei Rabbi Yonah l'Rabbi Eli dekaya pischa de tzar. Rabbi Yonah once met Rabbi Eli, who was standing by the entrance by tzar. Amr Lei, and he asked him, Kitani behema teyaker. The braisa said that if a Jew illegally purchased an animal from one of these idolatrous fairs, that there's a penalty, the animal would then have to be hamstrung. Yes, Eved Mai. What if a Jew illegally purchased a slave at one of these idolatrous fairs? Would the rabbinic penalty say that the slave owner would now have to go and injure the slave? He'll cut his tendon there in his leg and render him, you know, permanently crippled. Now he clarifies that Eved Yisrael Lokomi Boili, as far as if he purchased a Hebrew slave, I don't have a question about that case. Surely the halacha would not allow him to go and, you know, cause any injury to an Eved Yisrael, because the nature of the arrangement when it's an Eved Yisrael, when it's, you know, a Hebrew servant, is not one of ownership. The master does not own that Hebrew servant. Rather, it's more like a worker, so surely he can't go and injure his worker. My question is about a slave who's an idolater, where, you know, technically that idolater slave is considered the property of the slave owner. And so it's conceivable that the master, you know, if he did this, if he legally purchased the slave, which in a way that benefited an idol, they would have to go and cripple his slave. My. So what is the halacha in this situation? Amr Lei, Rabbi Eli answers, Maikami Bailach, what is your question? Tanya says in the Braisa that regarding Ha'ovdi Kochavim Viharoe Behem Medako, as far as idolaters, these are people who worship idols, so not, you know, the finest people, and the Roe Behem Medako, shepherds of the small animals, meaning this is a group of people where there is a clear presumption that they are thieves, they're petty thieves. Says the Braisa, Lo Malin, while if one of these people's lives was in danger, the halacha would not obligate a person to go and save his life, but v'lo moridin. At the same time, a Jew would not be permitted to actively go and, you know, kill one of these people. And so Bilai says, it's clear from the braisa that even if you're talking about a person who is not from the finest in society, he worships idols, he's a petty thief, perhaps he does even worse things, it still doesn't give a person the right to just go and kill that person. And so also, a Jew would surely be prohibited from inflicting, you know, a serious injury like this in the slave. And so his answer is the rabbinic penalty would not apply if you're talking about a human being, if he purchased an idolatrous slave. When I was a question about the other braisa we learned, the braisa said, we may purchase from these idolatrous sellers at the pagan fair animals, slaves, or maidservants. Rabbi Yirmiya wondered about the dispensation regarding slaves. And maybe it's limited to Eved Yisrael, specifically a Jewish servant. Or maybe the braisa even allows a Jew to purchase an Eved Kanani from one of these pagan fairs. Rizera answers, Amr Lei, Mistav Revit Yisrael. It's logical to say that the braisa's permit only includes purchasing a Hebrew servant from one of these idolatrous fairs. The E-Evid of a Kochavim, for to purchase an idolatrous slave, L'maimi Boilei. Why is that really necessary? Why would there be any particular kind of urgency that would prompt the braisa to permit this? The assumption in the conversation here is that there has to be some kind of factor that creates a need, an objective need to purchase whatever is being purchased. And so Reb Zera argues that we could understand the need to purchase this Hebrew servant as a Jewish person. So Let's free him from the hands of these idolatrous people. But you have no such need, seemingly, in the case of an Eved Kanani, so that should not be permitted. The Braisa would not permit it in that case, says Reb Zeira. However, Kiyosa Ravin Amar Rabbi Shimon Melakish, and Ravin came from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel, he taught in the name of Reish Lakish that no, filu Eved Avakachavim, that the Braisa even permits a Jew to purchase an idolater slave from one of these pagan fairs, Mipnesha Machnisa Tachas Kanfe Eshchina. For the Jewish buyer thereby brings this person under the wings of the Shekhinah. For the truth is, when a Jew purchases an Eved Kanani, that a non-Jewish slave has to go through a somewhat of a conversion. He is, to an extent, considered Jewish. Once he becomes the slave of a Jewish person, and assuming that, you know, he goes through that process properly, that is a positive thing. However, the Gemara questions this. Amar Rav Ashi said, Atu behema mai machnes tachas kanfei shechinah. But how would such a rationale be applicable in the other case of the Braisa, where it says he's allowed to even purchase animals at this pagan fair? You're not bringing the animal under the wings of the Shekhinah. So because of this question, Rav Ashi introduces a whole other argument here. He says, Ela mishum motinu. The real reason the Rabbanan allowed the purchase of animals at these pagan fairs is because this serves to diminish the holdings of these idolaters. We'll buy out their stock, and so it will ultimately diminish their wealth. So that's why it's allowed. So says Rav Ashi, as far as the question of purchasing a Gentile slave, achanami, the matishari, since buying their slaves also diminishes their wealth. So we could say that's the reason that the case of Eved Kanani is permitted as well. So Rav Ashi is saying we don't need the reason of that you're bringing a convert, bringing someone under the wings of the Shekhinah. The reason simply is that it's permitted because you're diminishing their wealth. The Gemara now presents a related story. Rabbi Yaakov Zavan Sandala. Once Rabbi Yaakov purchased some sandals at a pagan fair. Rabbi Yirmiyah Zavan Pita. Rabbi Yirmiyah went and purchased some bread at a pagan fair. Seemingly in violation of this problem that some of the money goes as taxes to the idol. And so each of them criticized the other. Amr Leichad Lechavre Yasma Avid Rabba Chachi. One said to his friend, you orphan, here meaning like you're bereft of knowledge of the halacha. Did your rabbi tell you could do this? I'm really idach yasma v'rabba chachi, and the other said the exact same thing to his friend. However, the Gemara explains that actually neither was in violation of the halacha. For v'tarvayumi balabaya zavan. Both of them did not purchase these things from an official merchant, rather from a balabaya. So it was just a private homeowner who sold them these things. So there was no taxes going to the idol. Each had mistakenly thought that the other one had purchased the item from an actual merchant, in which case it would be a problem. The Gemara explains further, the Amr Rabbi Abba Bereder B'chia Barabba Amr Rabbi Yochanan Lo Shonu Ela Belokeach Minatagar. As we had explained above, the prohibition, the problem of purchasing something at a pagan fair where the concern is that some of that money goes taxed to the idol, so you're benefiting the idol, that's only if the person purchased it from an actual merchant. Shakli mechsemines. Indeed, the tax for the idol will be collected from him. But if it's, you know, from somebody's basement, just some private homeowner, to purchase these things from him is fine because the idolatrous priest doesn't collect his tax from him. And so it's permitted. The Gemara says, though, Amar Rabbi Abba Bereid Rabbi Chia Barabba, El Mali Haya Rabbi Yochanan Hazimna, even though Rabbi Yochanan said this dispensation, if he was alive today, B'yasra Dikashakli Michsa Afilu Mibal Abayis, where nowadays the idolatrous priest will collect taxes even from some private, you know, an individual seller who's not selling, you know, in the official capacity of a merchant, but the idolatrous priests collect tax from them too. Savi Yasser. So Rabbi Yochanan himself would prohibit it nowadays. And so the question becomes, Eleinu Echizavan. So let's go back to the case of Rabbi Yaakov and Rabbi Yirmiyah. So how were they allowed to go and purchase things at this pagan fair if we're saying that the idol tax is collected from everyone, even from Baal HaBayis at that point already? The Gemara answers, Mi Baal HaBayis She'enu Kavua Zavan. In the case of Rabbi Yaakov and Rabbi Yirmiyah, they purchased those things from a private homeowner who didn't even regularly sell things. Not only was he not a merchant, but these sellers were not even in any kind of practice of selling things. They didn't do it as a regular thing. So for such sellers, you know, once in a while they'll sell something, even in later times of Rabbi Yaakov and Rabbi Yirmiyah, the idolatrous priests wouldn't go after them for taxes, and so there's no problem when they don't have to assume that part of the money would go to an idol. That's why, in their case, it was permitted.
You've been listening to RealClearDaf.com. Visit us online for resources or to dedicate a shiur. To speak with Rabbi Wise, call 855-ASK-RCD-1. That's 855-275-7231.